No, I'm thrilled to be here. To be back here, about 6.5 years ago was the last time I was with you, February of 2017. We were wrapping up your visiting process. Been working with you and your leadership, and Doyle and others, for about a year. And remember the sailboat motif and all that? And I remember in that season, Doyle and I talking. We were friends, and I said, Doyle, you're going to retire soon, right? He said, well, yeah, don't say it out loud. Somebody might hear you. And I said, well, when you do, I got a job for you. Because for me, Doyle was sort of the kind of pastor I want other people to meet. And I want to see him. I said to him, I want you to have a ministry beyond Jefferson City. He said, we'll talk about it. We'll talk about it. We did over time. I remember saying to him that day, do you think they know what they have in her? And he said, I don't know. I think so. I get a little emotional thinking about what's happened since then. I said, well, I hope they do, because if they don't, I'm going to come steal her for another church, because a lot of what I do these days is help churches find pastoral candidates. He said, I think they're that smart, and I'm really glad you are. Because I believe Melissa Hatfield represents the future, not just of this church, but of organizations like CBF and the American church. As we try to lean into this 21st century, here we are 3 decades in almost. It's about time we got here. Thank you for leading the way in many respects. So now, here you are. What do you do now? What's next? Start of a pastor's tenure is a significant moment in the life of any congregation. We're not like the Methodists, where they roll them in every so often. You've only had 4, now 5 pastors in, what, 67, 68 years. That's quite an impressive track record. I worked with a church the other day that had 5 pastors in the last decade, and the chairman called me and said, can you help us? And I said, well, what's going on? He said, you just can't find good help anymore. I said, I think there may be another issue here. But these seasons of transition are pivotal for a congregation. There are moments, there are opportunities. About 40 years ago, Bill Bridges wrote a book that probably is the book I give away as much as any as a pastor, my years as a pastor, called Transitions, Making Sense of Life's Changes. It's not an especially spiritual book, but it is incredibly insightful and adaptable to a congregation or a Christ follower. Bridges has this basic idea that for every beginning, there is an ending, and in between, a season of discovery, of turmoil, of uncertainty, of anxiety, of insight. So you have an ending, one pastor's tenure, and you have a beginning, another pastor's tenure. And in between, for congregations, there is this season, the interim, whatever you want to call it, of what do we do now? So Bridges says, look, everything that you've had as a beginning had an ending. I have a friend who had a biopsy done Thursday of this past week. As he left the doctor's office, they said, we'll let you know Monday the results. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. Now, what I know about him, and it would be true for me, is that is a season of anxiety, of uncertainty, I talked to him last night as I sat around Atlanta Airport for 6 hours. I said, how are you doing? He said, I'm hugging my family in ways I haven't hugged them in a long time. That ending of the illusion of health has created a season of focused attention. What's happening here? What do I take for granted that I shouldn't? And the discovery of his future will come within about 24 hours. Children of Israel were emancipated from a season of slavery in Egypt. The Exodus took place. The ending of their life as slaves. But they didn't enter the beginning of their life as the nation of Israel for how many? 40 years of wandering? And that season in between ending and beginning was a season of discovery of who they really were, of how to be dependent upon God's provisions and not their own, to be helpless without birds falling from the sky and food showing up every morning. It taught them something they would have never learned had they not gone through a difficult season. It's my experience of healthy churches that these in-between times are seasons of upheaval and uncertainty, but also seasons of discovery. Who are we really? Who are we without a senior pastor? Because there's something about the DNA of this church that exists far beyond any of us, any of you. It's in the hearts of the people. You've faced uncertain times before, the fire and other things that have transpired in your history, and there's been a season of uncertainty and then a season of beginning, and here you are again. So, a few words for you as you start this journey. Though it certainly started a few months ago, it really commences today officially. Words that I would offer to you, very pragmatic from what I've experienced watching literally hundreds of churches make this transition. Please don't waste this time. Please don't take it for granted. Please don't just assume that things will be back to normal soon. This is an opportunity for First Baptist, not just for your church, to really think deeply about who we are, why we're here, and where we're going. So a couple of pragmatic suggestions and then a couple of maybe more spiritual ones. All of them around the word up. First thing I want to suggest to you as she begins her official ministry here is that you show up. Thanks for showing up today. And you know, you're going to do this again next week, right? You show up. That you show up, you come, you participate. The rebound from COVID has been a challenge, honestly, to get people to show up. Because many people discovered that they were simply going through the motions of faith and church, and it didn't mean that much, and they didn't come back. Or they preferred the Church of the Holy Comforter. You know, that's the one where you stay in bed and wrap up in the comforter. You get it, right? Show up. During a season of transition, especially like the one you've experienced, many people pull back. We experience that. And this is a season to say, come back. Show up. Participate. Pull your weight. Do what God has gifted you to do in the midst of this place of ministry in this group of people. This is not a time to step back and watch somebody perform. There's some empty seats right up here. Come on up. There are empty seats out here. Invite your friends to come. Show up. An infusion of energy, of engagement, of participation is an answered prayer for her. I promise you. I've done this 3 times. been the new pastor, and you just hope people will show up. And when they're asked to participate, they'll say yes. Pragmatic suggestion number one, show up. Number two, you're going to love this one, pay up. Well, and I'm not just talking about the offering plate, although I am talking about the offering plate. This is an uncertain season of ministry in most congregations, financially. If you're going to really turbocharge things here, it's going to require some sacrifice, really. Isn't that what we're talking about? Make this a priority, a first thing, not a second or third or fourth thing. The economic uncertainty of our era and day is real. And the call of God upon your life to be a good steward has never stopped. Show up, pay up. I can talk more about that if you want me to, but I'm just going to leave it at that. Now, a little less pragmatic and a little more thoughtful. Look up. Look up. Meaning, lift your gaze from all the distractions that are in your life and look up. Jesus said, if I be lifted up, I will draw all people to me. And I don't know about you, but I've always discovered that is true. Jesus is no less popular than he's ever been. Now, the church, not so much, with good reason. But look up in the way that Jesus is talking about in Matthew 6. We are so distracted by all the things that worry us. What do we eat? Where do we live? What do we wear? Who's going to win the election? Blah, 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 blah. Look up. We serve a risen Savior. We're not in this world to just be another lemming running off the edge of the cliff. We have a different agenda. This church is about something bigger than all of that stuff. Look up. Remember who you are. Refocus your vision and your gaze from the things that distract you and remind yourself of the first thing. Seek first the kingdom or the reign of God, and all this other stuff will be added to you. We get transfixed and distracted and obsessed with the small things and forget the main things. The two great commandments and the great commission, I tell you what, let's work on those for a year. And when you're through with that, come back, I'll give you another one. Love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Love your neighbor as yourself. And go and make disciples. When you're done, let me know. That's a pretty good agenda, Melissa. Love God, vertical. Love your neighbor, horizontal. And let's go. And all these other things will be added to you. But what about the budget, Bill? What about our vacancies? What? It's going to be fine. If you look up and keep your gaze on the main thing, we'll be okay. Finally, give up. Give up. By that I mean, give up some things for some other things. Okay? Specifically, how about we give up our pride and prejudice for understanding and humility? Let's really be countercultural. Let's give up the easy notion of falling back into prejudging people and making my agenda everyone's agenda, and open ourselves up to humility and a willingness, honestly, to be contrarians in our culture, to look for and find ways to understand those we don't understand. My sense of your church is you've always done that. Let's just pour jet fuel on that. Because that's the voice of the church this country desperately needs. We've got enough churches adding to prejudice and bias. We desperately need congregations like yours to give up all of that presumption of wisdom and humbly say, oh God, show us your way. Give up talking for listening. Every new pastor knows what it's like to walk into the office for the first day and to see there's a line coming out your office to the street of people ready to tell you how to do your job. It's part of the deal. When I coach new pastors, I say, look, if you don't have some sense of agenda item for yourself that's bigger than just responding to all the needs that are presented, you'll be constantly chasing other people's agendas. We've had that conversation. And so to you, I would say, please do more listening than talking. God did give you two ears and only one mouth for a reason. Proportion matters. By that I mean, listen, not just to the pulpit, but listen, remember, to the Spirit. What is God saying to you? And be willing to put your agenda aside for the main thing. Seek first the wisdom, kingdom, the reign of God, the dream of God for this church, and all this other stuff will come your way. Couple of more give ups. Would you be willing to give up striving for the temporal for striving for the eternal? That's what Jesus is suggesting here. And the word is seek, but really the Greek is a little more of a strive, lean into it, strain for, go for the things that you cannot see versus the things you can see. There's a sense in which so much of the congregational work that we're involved in is trying to lift people's gaze from temporal, things that are temporary, earthly, if you will, and lift the gaze for the eternal. I'm convinced, man, I'm in some churches, I think there's no difference between this and the Rotary. And I'm a Rotarian, so I'm not down on Rotary. We're just kind of doing things, business as usual. We're not looking at the eternal aspects of who we are and what we do. We're worried about how does this affect me, not how does it affect that little girl right there who's ignoring me because she's 6 years old, and that's what six-year-olds do. I have 10 grandchildren, I know well. But how are we building a church for her? Not for me, not for all the senior adults in the room. And I'm one of you, I get it. But you know, and I know that the thing that we are most called to do is to look beyond what is good for me and ask, what is good for the kingdom? What is first things? What are they in this place? And to sacrifice, if you will, our agenda for his. Finally, I want to encourage you to give up fear and turn to confidence. If you look back at those verses that were read earlier, six times Jesus uses the word worry or worrying. Do you know why? Because he knew you and he knew me. He knows that our tendency is to worry. What's going to happen? Oh my, does anybody really know what's going to happen? Oh my, let's all get together and worry. Won't that be fun? I feel like, and Jeff probably feels this way too, a lot of times I go to church, it's the First Baptist Church of Worry. We come together and we worry. How's that working for you? And the alternative to worry, biblically speaking, is confidence. Paul says in 2 Corinthians 5, we are always confident because we walk by faith, not by sight. So would you give up this, oh no, for this? Oh boy. What is God up to with us in this season of ministry? Melissa, you've taken the baton, if you will, from your predecessors. You'll run your race, who knows how long. It is a baton, not a trophy. By the way, you've all got a baton in your hand. We do believe in the priesthood of every believer. So even though we're installing a pastor, she's just joining the whole company of pastors and priests in the room. We all have a baton in our hand, and our job is to be good stewards of this season of life. To look up, not to waste this transition. To show up and pay up and look up and give up as we run the race set before us. I don't know how long your run will be. Some of you, it'll be shorter than others. But for the time you're here, and in a season of transition and new beginning, I pray you will run with confidence. Please, please, enough with the worry. Let's be God's people for this season and this moment. Amen.